From the Opubco studios at Britain and Broadway, you're listening to a News OK podcast.
Welcome to the News OK Pet Show. I'm Dawn Marks.
And I'm Brian Dean.
And joining us today is Simone Scavron, director of the Pet Lou. And she's going to talk to us a little bit. We're going to talk about traveling with pets. Maybe in the summertime, people are kind of getting ready for that kind of thing. So are there some really good tips that you can give for us, especially if, say, we're flying or taking a really long trip, Simone?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me. Basically, I think when you're traveling with your pet, it's part common sense and it's part research. In terms of research, the best thing you can do is jump online and actually read the website of the airline that you're traveling with. And they've usually got a pretty step-by-step detail of what you need to know when you're traveling with your pet, which is great, in terms of vaccinations and that sort of thing. But in terms of common sense, aside from checking your airline policies, I guess what you want to do is try and book a flight that is during the coolest of the day, especially if you are doing that summer travel with your pet, because you don't know how long they may be sitting on the tarmac for, although they do try and minimise it. If you're flying middle of summer, you don't really want to have a midday flight. If you can fly sort of earlier on in the day or later on in the evening, you just avoid that really hot part of the day.
It's easier on the animal and maybe on you too, huh?
Definitely. It minimizes both the stress, I think. And of course, you're wanting to look to try and organize direct flights. That, again, will minimize the stress on the animal because you put them on the plane and then you get them off at the other end and then it's done.
Right.
I just remember reading a story about some airlines obviously are better than others when it comes to dealing with pets. Obviously, that's the kind of thing you want to research ahead of time. Is it something where you should probably pick an airline that you feel you're comfortable with? And, some allow small pets in a cabin. Others require you to go in the cargo hold. Is that something you feel like you kind of just have to research and be comfortable with before you decide where you're going to fly?
Yeah, definitely. And it's also what your pet's comfortable with. Some of the airlines, as you said, do allow small pets in the cabin. Some will let you check them in as hand luggage or as luggage when you actually arrive at the airport, and others will make you go through the cargo process. So you're wanting to minimise the amount of work that both you and that you have to do and the stress on the pet. Mm-hmm. We've just recently relocated from Australia, and there was a lot involved in popping them on the plane actually through the cargo process. So that took a lot of research, and they were fine when they got off at the other end, but it was all because I sat down and did weeks of research, so there were no surprises when I arrived at the airport.
My gosh, that must have been a really long flight for them.
It was worth it, and they got off the plane on the other end, and they were like, "Hi, Mum, now what? We're in LA. This is awesome."
Is it when you fly, your pet, and they have to go through the cargo process? The cargo's not treated the same way as the passengers. Is it temperature controlled? Is it pressurized? What is it a pet might have to go through in a cargo that wouldn't have a problem with in the cabin?
Well, they do pressurize it. The pilot is always aware if there are pets on board. They pressurize it. They make appropriate temperature for the pet because, it would be pretty cold down there if they didn't know that there was an animal on board. And they also apparently dim the lights to a point that it actually induces sleep for the pet.
That's probably good.
So they do everything that they can on their end to make the pet more comfortable, which is great for us owners to know.
Yeah, and then I guess you had to put them in some sort of carrier and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and with that carrier, you're wanting to get them used to that before you put them on the plane. So the idea is to just have it around your home for, a couple of weeks before you travel. Leave it open, let them go in and explore it, and teach them that if they go in, they always come out. You can pop food in it, and you can eventually even pop their dinner in it. So they're going in for longer periods of time, they're eating dinner, but then they turn around and they come straight back out. Mm-hmm. So you're wanting to familiarize them with that crate before you put them on the aeroplane.
I was going to ask, is there anything else you can do as far as working with your pet ahead of time? I've heard all kinds of strategies about putting a piece of your clothing in with the crate to make them feel more comfortable. When you're talking about putting a pet in especially if you're talking about a transatlantic flight or something like that that's going to take that long, what other things can you do as far as trying to train your pet for some of the stresses they might go through?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely get them used to the crate. If you're going to do a long flight like we had to do with our dogs, we actually put them on shorter flights in a couple of years leading up to this long flight. They got used to the plane, they got used to the noises, they got used to the experience. So by the time we put them on this long flight, the only difference was the area of time. But it wasn't a whole lot of experiences at one time, which made us all feel a whole lot better. But popping something in, putting their bed in, putting a toy in is a great idea. Putting in the lasting chew, for example, so they miles away while they're traveling, and then they actually forget what's going on. But if you are traveling internationally, you need to be really careful, because if they don't finish what it is that you've put into the crate, by the time you get there, it can also play around with the quarantine laws.
For example,
right.
If I put a pig or something in their crate in Australia, and when we got to America, they hadn't really finished it, well, then I brought meat into America, and that's
lovely.
Maybe not good, huh?
So, not great.
How many did you have with you on this flight?
We had two.
Two. What kind of dogs?
We've got two cockapoos.
Oh.
And, they know where the other one is. They were fine. So that was also great for us, knowing that they had each other down there.
Yeah. Well, were you able
I
to put them?
The other thing, sorry?
Oh, it's okay. What were you saying?
I was going to say, I guess the other thing that you want to do is make sure you exercise your pet a lot before the flight,
right,
so that they're
right.
a little exhausted, wanting to sleep on the plane, and make sure they've got plenty of water before they get on. I know it might mean at the end that you might have a little surprise in your cage when you open it up, but you prefer for them to wee in there than be thirsty.
Right.
Having
right.
said that, you don't want to feed them for a few hours before they fly, because then you might have a really nasty surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, any other last-minute tips for anybody that you can think of?
It's just, as I said before, it's just about checking the airline policies. They all do vary a little bit. Some require vaccination certificates, some don't. Some will want the weight of your pet before you get there.
Oh.
You know, it's just a matter of doing all of the research before you actually get there, and then you won't have any surprises.
Okay. Well, Simone, thank you so much. I think this will help our listeners. And we appreciate you coming talking to us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you. All right, Brian. Well, you have some news to give for us today?
I do. I have a couple interesting stories. We're going to start with one that I'm considering getting your four-year-old daughter for Christmas.
Oh, boy.
Journalists are hunting for the acid-spitting Mongolian death worm.
No.
Apparently, they're armed with explosives. Two men are heading to Mongolia's Gobi Desert to find the fabled acid-spitting and lightning-throwing Mongolian death worm. It's never been documented, but some Mongolians are convinced it exists. It's supposedly like 4 feet long, jumps out of the sand, and kills people by spitting concentrated acid or shooting lightning from its rectum over long distances.
Oh, gosh.
That's what New Zealand officials are reporting here. I'm just reporting the news here.
Brian,
this is in the sort of expanding field of cryptozoology. If you've ever heard of like the chupacabra, you know, these mm-hmm. creatures, or the Bigfoot, you know, that no one's sure exist and mm-hmm. are fabled. And I guess that they're searching for this one. And we'll have I have a lovely, lovely picture of it, of an artist's conception of what it might look like. And it's rather horrifying, but 4 foot long, as if a 4 foot long worm spitting acid wasn't scary enough.
Mm-hmm.
From there, we will go to a story about real pests that we know exist, mosquitoes.
Uh-huh.
And there's some new research out that shows if you are one of those people who thinks that mosquitoes are just like drawn to you, like you're a magnet for mosquitoes.
That would be me.
Apparently, that such a thing exists. Apparently 1 in 10 people are highly attractive to mosquitoes. For those that don't know, it's only the female mosquitoes that bite, and they're not using the human blood for food. It's to develop their fertile eggs. And apparently not just anybody's blood is the best. So they aren't really sure who mosquitoes are attracted to. They're trying to figure out exactly
what the common denominator is.
But apparently like 85% of it seems genetic. They found that about 85% of that attraction of the susceptibility to mosquito bites is genetic. They've also identified certain elements of body chemistry that when they're on your skin surface can attract mosquitoes. If you have high concentrations of steroids or cholesterol on your skin surface, apparently that attracts mosquitoes. Hmm. And there are certain acids, such as uric acid, and those people who produce more of that can also trigger the mosquito's sense of smell and lure in more mosquitoes. So they're not really totally sure yet exactly how this is going to play out, but the good news is if they figure this out, then it might help them come up with some more ways to repel them. Right now, the biggest problem with it is that, you know, you have DEET, which is the most effective,
mm-hmm.
but it's also kind of a harsh chemical, and a lot of people
right.
don't like using it. And some of the other treatments are still not, the science really isn't quite there, aren't as great. Citronella obviously works somewhat, but, you know, there are not a lot of great ways without, there are some new products out there for repelling mosquitoes, but it'd be nice if they could come up with something that would just, you know, maybe eliminate some of those chemicals that attract them in the first place. So
very interesting.
If you think you're a mosquito magnet, maybe find out if you've got too much steroids on your skin.
Hmm. Okay. I don't know how to test for that. Okay. Well, I have a couple of tips that go along with our show today. Traveling with older dogs, and not necessarily air travel, but any kind of travel. These come from cfido.com. And first thing that it says is, it would be a great disappointment to your old dog if they were not able to go. So you have to pay attention to your older dog, and don't leave them out just because they're old. And so if you want to do that, you want to take into account the age, of course. They may dislike anything that's too cold or too hot, so you try to, you know, change your times that you're going or whatever. And then make sure that he has water and then food that he is used to eating, because, you know, sometimes the older dogs maybe can get a little more car sick or maybe a little more upset stomach. So don't mess around with the food too much. And then you can always talk to your veterinarian about whether he or she thinks that the dog is capable of making a trip. And then if so, if some sort of medicines might be able to help that along a little bit. So those are from cfido.com. And so I guess everyone, if you want to take a trip, you should be well prepared. Go out and travel with your pets. Thanks.